Welcome to the Lean Health Tech Podcast, where industry professionals discuss trends and topics where efficiency, healthcare, and technology meet. My name is Taryn Shipley, and I'm your host. Our guest speaker today is Dr. Lee Mack, managing partner of MedRock, which is a healthcare AI company. Can you tell me a little bit about your background and areas of expertise?
I went back to medical school midlife. I did corporate America stuff back in the day. Worked for different companies in different industries, heavy equipment, auto industry, Ford. Had a midlife crisis and started getting into medical laser sales, and then started getting into some nanotechnology, and then found myself in a meeting in Chicago with a neurosurgeon at the annual National Spine Conference. And he asked me where I got my PhD, and I said, I don't have one. And he's like, wow, really? And it kind of went from a PhD to an MD, program in nanotechnology for medicine. 2015, I was over at Oxford again, doing plastics trauma surgery training at John Radcliffe. So both my postgrads for PhD and MD were at University of Oxford. Was planned to come back and be in corporate America, be a clinical researcher. So I came back, worked for ABL, American Biotech Labs, that makes nanoparticle for infectious disease. But I got working for Crucial Data Solutions, who makes TrialKit, which is clinical trial software, in 17, and was their CMO right at 5 years, and kind of learned software there. Went to work for Self-Care Catalyst, but before that I did utilization review for Ballad Health System, which is in 3 states now. We had 20 locations, and that was inpatient determination. COVID hit, that all changed. I started getting into RPA, robotic process automation, worked with Blue Prism a lot on different projects, and developed my own RPA version of inpatient determination software. Went to work for Self-Care Catalyst, which is a patient-reported outcome. Then that got bought by Alira Health. And then most recently, I've worked for Adherex. And so I have about a year, maybe a little bit more now, of experience using AI for processes in healthcare. So under my consulting business, I contracted as the chief medical technology officer for Adherex, which is cloning the doctor's voice to reach out by text to the patients. The patients are identified with 2 or more chronic conditions, typically on Medicare. They would call back in. We had the software that would basically ask questions based on our conditions, you know, DM2, CAD, CHF, COPD, CKD, all that stuff. It would record it. We would run it through one AI system to clean up the transcript. Everybody uses one of 2 medical transcription softwares. We were using AWS's. Pretty open about that. No company secret there, but AWS is a great platform. Then we used another AI function to actually write a clinical care plan. And now I'm managing partner of MedRock, which is an AI-based platform where we're using the inpatient determination software. We switched from RPA to AI-based. It will take a 2.5-3 day hospital stay of a patient, run it against Interqual and MCG criteria along with the latest research, determine if they meet criteria for inpatient in about a minute. So it takes everything into consideration. So it's a lot faster than a lot of the other software that's out there, and actually pretty good at writing almost a quasi-appeal letter for your initial approval. The other thing we're doing is looking at prior auths, actually automating some of the prior auth processes. And the third is kind of we're starting to get into phase 4 clinical research, kind of automating some of that, but that's pretty new.
So you mentioned AI in multiple areas of medicine, and I agree, mm-hmm. It's totally necessary. We need to reduce the administrative burden on clinicians, but let's talk about the AI. I'm going to call it AI wars. It's or AI ping pong, if you will. So healthcare organizations develop AI, we'll say for a prior auth, and then insurance companies, payers, also have an AI which denies said prior auth. And then, right, healthcare companies have an automatic AI appeal. So let's talk about the AI ping pong. And is it kind of a race, like, may the best man with AI win?
It is. And I can go a lot deeper into that. We talk about this, you know, at length, like weekly. If you look at the operational tempo of this, it's about every 60 days. So if you look at Anthropic and OpenAI and, you know, everybody else on the block, and I think NVIDIA's even running faster. I think they're on a 45-day timetable, but it seems like about 60 days, something major is happening. Imaging and video that, you know, Midjourney's doing and those kind of folks too. You know, all this stuff ties in. And interestingly enough, the AI from FinTech is very similar as far as regulation and security, audit trail, encryption, et cetera, to what's required by HHS and FDA for regulatory compliance. It's really interesting. I even talked to guys in FinTech about what they're doing. But what we're seeing is U.S. healthcare systems, specifically the hospitals, are not tech savvy. I mean, they really aren't. When you look at it from an EHR standpoint and integration, and even, you know, the big dogs on the block like Epic and Cerner and all that stuff, it's really not technologically advanced as other industry. Let's say FinTech would probably be the closest thing to compare it to, let alone other industries. I mean, if you're in pure Silicon Valley, this stuff is so archaic. And the C-level at these healthcare systems, there's an interest and an appetite, but nobody has the vision, I think it is the right word I'm looking for, to see like 3, 5, 10 years out, you know, how they want to strategically lay this out for their healthcare system. They're just kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool. I use GPT-4 to help me write my reports for my CEO and that kind of thing. But other than that, I mean, we're talking about, I was doing a cystic fibrosis phase 4 trial, and I did it in, I don't know, 19 or something like that. And I had people faxing stuff. Fax, you know, they go, oh, you get your fax number? I said, no, we're not doing fax. We do HIPAA compliant email. I don't know about you, but I gave my fax. I think I quit using my fax machine as a boat anchor 10 years ago, and I quit using it as a fax machine 20 years ago. It's really archaic. There's still people that are trying to get fax digitally and assimilate it into their EHR. So it's really, really backwards. I think there's an interest and appetite. I don't think there's a lot of vision for this. I think there are pockets of companies that are developing some really cool stuff in radiology, pathology. So going back to this AI, you know, it's new and mainstream as far as I give it, you know, what, last year and a half or so, maybe two, if you want to stretch it. I think a lot of people in healthcare are using it clandestinely, meaning they're using it for their own job efficiencies. They're not using it on any kind of scale level. That being said, I know a group out of Dublin, Ireland, a radiologist, you know, really kind of big dog in Ireland. They're doing some really trick stuff with imaging and using AI for X-ray, CT, MRI, everything across the board. I think you're going to see some real efficiencies in that. And you already have. Siemens is involved. GE is involved. AI is kind of probably going to be a force multiplier as far as making people's jobs in healthcare more efficient. We're already seeing it in dictation. What do we have, like 16 different companies, maybe 18 different companies that are using an AI-based scribe system, for lack of a better term, where it can record 2 or 3 people in a room and identify who the doctor is, who the patient is, and who the family member is. And it'll extract out AWS medical transcribe will do it. It'll pull out the drugs they're talking about, the condition codes. It'll ICD-10 code them, the whole nine yards. There's certain hospital systems right now in the Midwest that are just down the road from you that are actually integrating some new AI-based scribe systems. And that's good. And they're trying to integrate it into the EHRs. To your point, I don't think the legacy systems that everybody's running I think that's going to be the biggest problem on integrating it, because you got, you know, legacy system for healthcare accounting, then you got Epic, then you got, you're using Voicera for this, and you're using, you know, Pyxis for your drugs, and you know, half a dozen other systems. The interoperability is going to be a big thing.
We've talked about how there are lots of different healthcare AI companies, some of which we absolutely think will make things more efficient. I want to talk a little bit about AGI and the swarm intelligence, because honestly, when I spoke with you a few months ago, you were the first person that introduced me to swarm intelligence. So let's put a definition on it just for the listeners. I've done my own research and it's
Okay.
pretty cool.
Swarm is something I didn't read about. It was just something I kind of like came up with. So to get into the deeper AI stuff and not get negative on the US healthcare system, but I got some buddies. They did Hub City. They started Omnicare in like 10 days. They use microservices and hash coding for data. And I'll delve into the storage in a second. So if you think of binary code storage, right? So binary code storage is, X, right? It takes so much, it's a big data hog. But now there's talk of actually making synthetic-based DNA for storage. To your point of swarm, is we're looking at organic life and how we can take the AI and link like organic life models, for lack of a better term, with AI, whether it's storage. So we use like a synthetic DNA. And I've been told, I'm not a storage expert, that you could store the world's information from the web on something like the size of 70 postage stamps in DNA. It's just an amazing amount of storage that they're looking at doing. And there's some cutting edge stuff on that that's really interesting. Then be able to access and read that so quickly. It's going to be quicker than binary, they think. But going to swarm technology, we look at the drones, right? We look at drones and robotics in physical life and what's been going on with drones in the UK. And so what would stop a, let's say, let's put it back to healthcare. So let's say we're doing these prior authorizations, right? We're using an AI agent, it's in a secure HIPAA secure platform, all that, SOC 2, AES 256-bit, all that happy stuff. And we reside it by states, just like the healthcare company. So we have one for Texas and one for California and so on and so forth. And we have within that silo, we have an agent for each payer. So we got one for Aetna, one for Cigna, one for, and that agent knows just Cigna stuff, right? And it goes through. But at some point, everything in the Texas silo or everything in the California silo can start learning from each other, right? They can start learning, like, oh, this is, approved at this rate when they document, additionally this in the patient's record. It starts building case law. But where you get a real synergy is when these things start communicating with each other. So they're still in the silos, still in the secure environment, but they start learning from each other as agents. So each agent is an expert in, let's say, a payer group, a payer in that group, or, which would be kind of unique. To your point, then you're building a better tool that the insurance company doesn't have. And now the insurance company is going to, build, somebody's going to build something and sell them something. So it's going to be kind of an arms race, for lack of a better term. But I wrote an article on wound care, and I said, I kind of played with this concept that we have one data lake repository where all these wound care patients' de-identified information is in there. And you don't come up with any new widgets. There's no new, wound care device or some kind of new thing. It's just strictly technique. And, treating this diabetic wound this way every day or instead of every other day is going to have this much better healing process, all things equal. And you're not going to normally see that, but with this huge data system and you're running algorithms across it all the time to look for this stuff and identify, 5%, 10% increases in healing, what are they doing? They're doing it once a day instead of every other day. Oh, okay. You take that from a swarm technology. Let's say we play it to radiology or pathology. Let's go with pathology. So we have all these agents, one agent's doing, Hep B virus, another one's doing a COVID virus. That's what your agent is doing. It's kind of overkill. But for you have a whole silo full of virology agents. And all of a sudden, they can start learning from each other and having this kind of group interaction where you have synergy. So you'd have a synergistic approach to making correlations between all the viruses and maybe at the DNA level. They're starting to look at like how they replicate, how they target. Oh, there's correlations here. and they start learning from each other, but it's going to move a lot faster than any human could. This is going to really come into play when we have quantum computer slave to this stuff. It's very synergistic now, right? We're seeing 300, 400% faster in programming, right? Because we're using AI to write code. And then, you know, I don't know what you've used it for, but you can write a book. You can write a novel in 3 weeks. I mean, like 250, 300 pages with AI systems now. But if you slave that to a swarm, you know, that would probably shave it down to a week. So I think we're going to see another quantum leap of 200, 300% more efficiency, specificity, sensitivity, whatever you want to dial it into, on top of what we're seeing right now.
And in addition to the benefits of increased quality, increased efficiency, it's also requiring less computing power, right? Because your swarm is composed of several different specialized AI, I'll call them AI agents, and each one has its area of specialization. And it doesn't require quite as much energy. And I know a few years back, it was kind
it
of
could, trendy. Yeah.
It was trendy for companies to say, our goal is to reduce our carbon footprint by 50%. And now all these companies are seeing their carbon footprint increase because they're implementing AI.
Yeah. And I think to your point, you know, going back to that DNA storage concept, cloud systems that reside out in Utah on these acres of air conditioned servers, right? We can store all of it on something that would fit on your finger or your hand. I mean, you think about that and you're like, well, you know, we don't have to cool it. We don't have to do this. Actually, you can freeze it, you know, just like regular DNA. The synthetic DNA is supposed to be able to put your data in it, and 1,000 years from now, you can come back and unwind it and find it. So I think to your energy standpoint, I think we're going to see that concept of the synthetic DNA for data storage. You know, honestly, I think it's probably going to be 2030, but maybe it'll be 2028. I think you're right. It's probably going to be swarm in 2025, 2026, but it's going to be really interesting because I think in 2026, a lot's going to happen. And I didn't pick that year. I'm just looking at the generational changes. So we go back to like for every 60 days. And, you know, we would in 2026, what are we going to be? GPT-7, 8? You know, something like that. Probably Anthropic is going to be up to 5 or 6. So we're going to have another 2 or 3 generations away. There's a, you know, triangulation between quantum computing coming online and becoming more economical, and DNA storage, and, you know, what, 5th, 7th generation of AI altogether.
It seems like the market for AI has obviously rapidly expanded in the last 2 years. Do you think there will be a contraction? Do you think the smaller companies will be weeded out and the marketplace will be won by, we'll say, a big five? Because I'm thinking about equating this to internet search. And back in the day, like there was Yahoo, there was Google, there was Bing. There were a plethora of search methods for the internet. And now people say, oh, just Google it. Google it has become a verb. So are people in the future just going to say, oh, ChatGPT it? And will many of the other smaller large language models lose market share and kind of slowly and quietly disappear?
If I knew the answers to that, I'd, you know, buy the stock and retire in 2 years. To your point, I think everybody's already doing it. Maybe I'm just the odd man out. But I use example. My dad wanted a spark plug for his lawnmower. And, you know, I'm looking at Google. I'm like, this is a mess. It's just got a bunch of crap and garbage and ads. So I got Perplexity, and I'm on Perplexity Pro. And I just put in the model of the mower and said, need a spark plug in, you know, champion size. 5, 10 seconds later, it just spits it out. It's easy to read. I know what I need. I got it. Done. Right. Google, you know, that would have taken me, what, 2, 3 minutes digging through crap on there because, you know, of all the stuff and ads and sponsors. And yeah, it's already there. I don't know if you use it for stuff, but I already use it as a search engine. I probably use Perplexity more than GPT. You know, it actually references it too. So if you really want to dig in the weeds, you can get the link to the site that they found it at. I think you're going to see AI that can actually reference where they got the information as a search engine. But what would be cool is, let's say you want to go on vacation, right? So you go, hey, I'm just going to have a little agent run. I was talking to a detective from LAPD. We're at a CA conference, a civil affairs conference together. And I said, imagine just turning an agent loose and just having it surveil like 100 people that you guys want to watch that you don't have the time or effort or money to do. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, just watches everything to do. It watches public cameras. It watches social media. It watches basically all the public available intel you can get. And just sit there and churns away at it all the time. Just watching for changes. And then it alerts you to whatever parameters you guys set up. He's like, ah, you need to come design stuff for us. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Never did. But, you know, you could have it sit there and surveil, you know, you and your husband want to go on a cruise, right? So you just have it sit there and surveil like five cruise lines that leave these ports on this time. And you just say, hey, when it gets to 40% off list, let me know and I'll buy it. And it just sits there and cranks away at their websites. So I think people are using it like that now, not that they set up agents and GitHub and, you know, I'm sure somebody is doing it, you know, where it's just surveilling, you know, a website and, or, you know, multiple websites looking for the best deal. That's going to happen. But, you know, you can apply that going back to medicine. You know, you could sit there and do it with patient, right? You could do it with everybody in the hospital. You could have it sit there surveilling all the vitals, you know, all the med tech and nurses charting all the time. Think about from quality, sepsis, right? Hey, wait, the parameters are getting right here for this person to be septic. Red flag, alert, you know, or a code. You know, everybody's getting numb to all these bells and whistles and everything else. So just drone it out. ICCU would be, you know, you just have an AI running over their vitals like 24/7. It'd be really kind of neat. To your point, I think people are already using the large models. Bing's already kind of done it, but then they kind of shot themselves in the foot by letting everybody know that they're going to be tracked.
That gets into a whole other bag of worms, which is security. If it's so easy to surveil everyone with their every move on social media, on public cameras, what are your thoughts on security? Is Big Brother always watching us in the future?
Oh yeah. My wife and I have decided that probably, I think in 2017, that we live in a glass house and we're naked digitally. Everybody has this fantasy that they're not surveilled on social media and, you know, Facebook and all the other ones. Facebook's, you know, probably one that really comes to mind. I'll challenge you with this. Talk to your husband. If you don't have a cat, talk about cat food. This is a really good example. So I got Apple TVs and I have an Apple phone. I probably had Find My Phone or whatever on, right? So I was down at Honda in Greensboro. It was for the Acres project. And we're looking at it as a model that we could go to three, you know, we could do three setups, three meetings a day instead of one on commercial airlines. We go up, we're flying around, you know, get sitting, fly, do a few turns on right seat, come back. And 24 hours later, I'm sitting in my living room in Tennessee and Gulfstream has got an ad on, like multiple Gulfstream jet ads on my Apple TV. Now, you can't tell me that Gulfstream jet ads are mainline advertising with cereal and all the other pharmaceuticals, right? So the connection is it went down and it tracked me and it figured out where I was in, you know, a geo track. You know, we look at the TSA and all that stuff, you know, now they're doing the facial recognition. Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines on all our cruises, you get facial recognition and they use that to track you everywhere on the ship. Yeah, digital footprints everywhere.
Do you think there will be an anti-AI movement or an anti-technology movement coming up here?
I think there already is. The writers are very threatened. People in Hollywood are very threatened. I mean, imagine, you know, two college kids or two, don't you have, you know, 20-year-olds. And they get together and say, hey, let's make a full-length 6K feature movie with AI. In 2 years, you're going to be able to create your own, you know, famous actress and actors and develop them as characters and make them a hybrid between maybe five current actors. But they're different enough that, you know, it doesn't infringe on the graphic. It's 10% different than all the other actors, let's say. You know, you develop that and your actor doesn't age. You know, you develop, you basically make a full feature movie in 3 weeks. So I think a lot of people are threatened by that. A lot of groups are. We're already seeing it in the music industry. We're already seeing it. I think writing has just gone away. I mean, it's between the high-end Grammarly and slaving it to like GPT-4. I mean, you can write a bunch of neat stuff. The other side of it is reading, right? How about all the people that read legal documents? That's gone. That job left last winter. So, yeah, I think a lot of people are threatened by it. The programmers are already seeing it. I saw the programmers out of India start August of last year. Big, big groups of people out of work. So they're threatened and they're hungry for work.
AI is definitely causing a massive increase in unemployment.
Well, I think it's going to have to shift, right? It's going to have to shift. So instead of, okay, so imagine, if you will, you go into a healthcare system and we've got a shortage of doctors, right? And, we're really still on the cusp of shortage of nurses, even though we're really feeding that beast. And you're still going to need that. But imagine, if you will, you get somebody and go, okay, we're going to give two years of healthcare training, or kind of this hybrid between medical tech on steroids, and then we're going to teach you how to prompt. And you're going to be a prompt scientist with all this, let's say, high-end paramedic, almost like a 18 Delta kind of person, right? 18 Delta's medic and special forces. So you just cram 2 years of training into them. So they come in, and that's the first person you see. They go, okay, what's your chief complaint? Boom, put that in. They type it in. They bring up your EHR. They look at all your history. Then they take your vitals, and then the AI says, oh, they got a temperature, they got this history, they got this, they got pain here. Okay, so we go, oh, okay, so then it says, do a CBC and a CMP, right? And then so they have the authority to do basic labs. So they just send the person next door, they pull the labs, they run it through, a fast analyzer. It dumps right to the EHR. Hey, WBC is high, right? White blood cell count is high. Huh, okay, and that tells you to do this. Oh, maybe we want to do some imaging. Pain in the lower right quadrant. Huh, oh, so it tells you to do this imaging. And then, so by the time doc gets, it goes, yep, you got appendicitis, we need to do surgery, because here's the imaging, here's the labs, everything I need to know, and make a decision on, let's schedule them for surgery, because, the appendix is about to rupture, boom, boom, boom. How fast did that take? Versus room them with the tech, have the doctor come in, decide to run labs, decide to run imaging, come back around. I mean, that's two people in the loop instead of five. So I think we're going to see it in some kind of new jobs in healthcare. I think it'll look something like that, where we're going to see a lot more prompt scientists. So you know enough about your industry to direct the AI to come up with the right answer for the problem. I think in healthcare, I think that's where the new jobs are going to be, are prompt scientists, or people like laying out how to organize the data to train a model. I think that might be a job opportunity. I don't know.
There are care pods already. Have you seen or heard about these care pods? They're not in the US yet. I think they're just in Asia. You literally, it's like a little room almost. You go and you sit down on a bench and AI can scan your face to detect, I mean, your temperature, your blood pressure, your heart rate, and it scans you for a myriad of conditions. And it tells you like what are you high risk for and potential conditions that you might have. What are your thoughts on that type of deal?
I think that's a novelty. We tried doing an AI only, where we were getting a patient to call in before surgery, and it was talking, it was asking questions, making sure they're not, their MPO, no, not on any new drugs, stopped, or Eliquis, or warfarin, or whatever before surgery, right? Because a lot of surgeries need to be canceled because of the patient doing something or not doing something. So it's kind of a reminder slash questions to verify that it would automatically do the transcription, go through, automatically alert the doctor by 2 o'clock. So the calls went out at 9:10. The doctor had all these, all this information at 2, and you need to reschedule surgery before roughly 4 at most healthcare systems for the next day. So you had a 2-hour window to review it. The problem was he didn't review it. But going back to this, we need humans in the loop, right? So everything that I work on is always a human in the loop. You always have a nurse reviewing, a care plan. Is this jive? I look at the chart. Is this right? Yes, it looks right. I'm going to add my note. This type of thing is like, well, you're not going to draw blood from these people, so you're not going to be able to necessarily do labs. The general public is not going to be comfortable with a robot, sticking a needle in them. We're way off from that. I think we got to have a human in the loop. So that's where I think this, health tech prompt scientist would come in, because, you still have the phlebotomist or, the person drawing labs and stuff. I still think you're gonna have the humans in the loop. I think what we're gonna see is all that tech can make their life a lot easier and more importantly, more accurate, right? So you can analyze all those labs for that appendicitis case. And maybe we can pick up on something else that you normally wouldn't have. So I think we're gonna see a quality improvement of care. I think we're gonna see more sensitivity, specificity. In probably 3 years, it'll pick up rare diseases if given enough information. I don't think you're gonna see full automation like that. I don't think people want it. It's nice, but it's not gonna do everything.
We've talked about a lot of niche areas and components to AI and what AI will bring in the future. What can organizations like large healthcare systems, what can they do right now to ensure that they're staying up to date with AI? I know healthcare is behind, but if you're talking to a CMIO, CI, what can they do to make sure
I
that
think
they're keeping up?
take your top 10 pain points. Maybe it's infections, maybe it's care gaps. A lot of stuff runs around HEDIS, stars, MIPS, all that stuff. Their ratings of CMS. Maybe they're not coding something, oh, we missed stuff on ICD-10 coding. We're kind of lacking on that. So could we take a workup like that's already existing? And I'm sure Judy up at Epic's already got this going. But the other one is placement after, okay, they're coming after 4 days stay, but we're gonna put them in a SNF or an LTC. That's a big gap. It's still dialing for dollars. I don't know if you know that. You have a nurse or probably more a care manager that calls around. Hey, do you have space for this patient? They got ABC. Hey, do you have space for this patient today? They got, DEF. And it's actually dialing for dollars. I know Epic and Judy and folks are working on that to automate some of that. So I think you take, going back to your question, I think you take your top 10 or 15 and go, what are our major problems? What's costing us the most money? And then you start looking at AI systems with a human in the loop. And it doesn't even have to be, HIPAA centric stuff. You could look at quality stuff. You could look at even your inventory control. You could have AI analyze all your widgets and syringes and everything in your Pyxis and take your Pyxis data and start crunching it and saying, okay, what haven't we turned in like 3 weeks? I guarantee you, if you go to Caterpillar dealer and you ask them what their turns are, they're going to say our turns are 3.12, right? I turn all my inventory 3.12. You ask them a hydraulic cylinder, they can tell you how many days they turn that stuff. It's pretty savvy. And I don't think the hospital systems have that. So, you're like, well, how much money is tied up in inventory that the stuff's sitting there for 90 days and we're not using it? Is it LIFO, FIFO, something simple like that, and analyzing it. There's so much you could do, but I think the first thing is identify your pain points and then start looking at human in the loop AI solutions. And maybe it's not out there, but maybe you just put it on your radar and go, okay, when the inventory AI system comes out, we're gonna look at those as soon as that starts emerging.
And you touched on a really important point that it doesn't need to be HIPAA related. I think many people in healthcare automatically assume we can't use AI. Our data is very sensitive, not realizing that there's a whole business back end to healthcare, which is very inefficient, which is ripe for redesigning those processes. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge around AI.
This concludes today's Lean Health Tech podcast. If you're a listener and would like to hear a certain topic covered in future episodes, please let me know by leaving a review or comment. Thanks for joining, and be sure to check out the next episode.